Good morning, church. It is good to be here. Even though we are unable to see you, we are with you, and we are encouraged by your participation as we continue these online services. And we've been studying the promises of God this month. That has been our theme for this month's sermon series. And I've been really just thinking about this concept of a promise and having promises and being promised things, and I find myself kind of struggling with these ideas of a promise. And I think the reason that I struggle with promises is because I am a skeptic. I will admit that I'm a skeptic of people's word and what they say and their intentions. And I think that maybe you fall in that as well. I kind of find myself questioning when somebody promises me something. Is this going to really happen? Is it real? Is it true? And so I find myself being a skeptic. And I think it's because sometimes when people promise things, it's a way of manipulation, that the world has taken promises and they have used them against us to manipulate us and cause us to do things that they want us to do. And so we're kind of skeptical. And sometimes they are well-meaning, but they never come to a reality. And so we question whether they will actually follow through with the thing that they have promised. And I find myself being very skeptical of promises. The truth is we've all been lied to. I think that's a truth we can all share, that we've all been lied to at one point or another. And we have all been recipients of a well-intentioned promise that just never truly was realized. We've all been there. We've been in that boat. We understand what that means. Because of our life experiences, we have doubts. We doubt people in their word. I mean, have you ever been so certain of a promise? I mean, just so certain of a promise that somebody has made to you, that you are willing to give up everything, that you are willing to sacrifice everything that you have and everything that you are for what could be the future, right? You don't know what the future is going to hold, but you've got this promise, and now you're willing to sacrifice everything to obtain it. And you're so certain of this promise that you are willing to give up your house, to sell your house, or to sell your car, or to quit your job, pack up everything that you have left, and just go to this place that you've never been to before. Just go, and you think, you know, this is going to be it, that this is going to be the future. Have you ever been in that situation where you were so certain of the promise that you were given that you were willing to make that kind of sacrifice, right? The place that sounds too good to be true. It's just too good to be true, but you're willing to make the sacrifice to obtain it. And you sacrifice what you have now, this known thing that you have, these tangible things, this life that you have right now that you see, that you feel, that you experience, for an unknown thing. Something that, well, may not be certain. It may not be true. And you're thinking, yes, but I believe it's true. And I want it to be true. And I'm willing to sacrifice everything just on this person's word. You know, if someone were to come to me, right, a family member, a friend, a member of the church, and they would say, hey, I got this great thing. Somebody is promising me all of these things, all of a great house and a great car and a new job. And it's all going to be wonderful and it's going to be great. And all I have to do is sell everything. And I can get it. I can have it. I just sell my car right now. I sell my house and I leave my family behind and I sell everything. I quit my job and I leave it all behind and I just go. And they promised me that if I do that, that they're going to give me a bigger house and, you know, bigger car and a better life for me and my family. And I'll have possessions beyond my comprehension. That's the promise. I'd have a few questions for him, right? I mean, I want to know a few things. I'd want to ask some questions about this promise. If somebody were to come to me with that, I would want to know something about the promise. And first off, I want to know how trustworthy is this person, right? How well do you know this person? How trustworthy is this person that you're willing to give up everything that you have, everything that you own, this known thing for an unknown thing in place? How trustworthy is this person? And the second question I would have is, how great is this promise, right? I mean, how great is this promise that you're willing to make that sacrifice, that you're willing to chance the thing that you have right now for something for the future? How great is this sacrifice? Because let's face it, some promises that seem too good to be true are indeed too good to be true. We know that. We know that from life experiences. And our willingness to sacrifice what we have for a promise is based on the trustworthiness of the person promising, and it's based on the greatness of the promise. Because you see, as we learn from Scripture, right, when God is the one who is promising, when God is the one who is making the promise, when God is the one who is speaking, we can be sure that the one speaking, that is God, is indeed trustworthy. And what he is promising will be far greater than we could ever imagine. So this morning, we're going to spend some time in Genesis chapter 12. And we're going to be looking at a man by the name of Abram. We know him as Abraham, right? It is wife Sarai, who we know as Sarah. And we're going to be looking at this promise that God made to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. In verse 1, God speaks to Abram and he says to him, "Go forth." This is the main thrust of this section of this promise here. "Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you," right? So in other words, just leave it all behind, right? Just leave your home, leave your land. In our world, this would be equivalent to leaving your house and your job and your car and your family and just going to this place that they will show us when we get there, right? Leave everything behind. Leave it all behind. That's the command. And then the promise itself, we'll see in verse 2. And he says, "I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed." You see, if this promise had come from someone else, right? If this promise had come from another source, we would think this is just too good to be true, right? I mean, we'd be skeptics. It's too good to be true. You know, what makes me think that leaving everything behind right now and just going, that the future is going to be greater than my present? What makes me think that? How are you going to prove that to me? Right? Because if this came from anybody else, we would be skeptical of the conclusion. We would have questions. But this doesn't come from just anybody, does it? It comes from God himself. It is God speaking to Abraham. So Abraham is faced with a choice, right? He has to make a decision. Does he trust God? Does he trust God? Does he trust his promises? In other words, do I believe that what the future holds, that what God has in store for me and my family, do I believe that it is greater than what I have in the present? And we don't know a whole lot about Abraham's original life. The Bible doesn't give us a lot of details, but what we do know about the land that he came from, it was a highly sophisticated land. It was a land of great wealth. I mean, it was a land that was surprisingly sophisticated. In fact, with Abraham, he wasn't just some poor farmer somewhere, that he would have had a lot of possessions, a lot of family that he would leave behind. And Abraham has to make a choice. Will I trust God? Will I trust God based on his word? And then in verse 4, it says, "So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him." You see, the willingness of Abraham to leave everything and obey God shows the greatness of his faith, right? That Abraham was faithful, that he believed God, that he trusted God. that he was committed to the word of God. And Abraham is faithful. And this example that we see of Abraham and his faithfulness is one that is used throughout the New Testament to show the faithfulness that we are to have in God's promises for salvation, that we are to trust and have faith like Abraham trusted and have faith and obey God. But look what the rest of that verse says. It says, and Lot went with him. And we might even be able to say, and it's suggested by some that it could be translated, but, right? But Lot went with him. Lot goes with Abraham. Abraham willingly takes his nephew. We realize that he's his nephew, that Abraham's brother has died and Lot is going to take his nephew. But remember what God said? Just in this, in the words of God, we read them. Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house. So why would Abraham take Lot? I mean, that's always been the big question. Why is Lot there, right? Why is he there? And maybe there's a clue in the text where it just simply tells us Lot is with him. You know, why would that even be mentioned, right? And so we see that there's something with this that's maybe not quite right. Maybe Abraham is trying to help God out a little bit. Well, we don't really know the reason why Lot goes with him or why Abraham insists, but we do know a few things. We know that Sarah is barren, and Abraham would have known this. We know that part of this promise was to bring about a nation through Abraham, and maybe, just maybe, that Abraham is thinking through this thing, and he's thinking, okay, well, you know, I could take my nephew, he's kin, and he can come with me, and maybe through Lot, God will fulfill his promise. Maybe I need to help God out a little bit, right? Maybe that's what he's thinking. We don't know, but there's that idea there, isn't it? Because we have those thoughts. We have those ideas. We do those things, don't we? Sometimes we try to help God out. We try to help him out. That God has made a promise and we try to help him just a little bit, right? And by obeying him, but not obeying him completely, we try to help him a little. We try to say, you know, God, I know you've made this promise. I know your word is true and I trust you. But I'm going to do this little thing over here, and I think this is going to help things out. I'm going to make this little change. I'm going to do this little extra thing, and I think it's going to make things better, right? I think it's going to change the whole thing. I'm just going to do this, all right? I mean, I trust you at all, God, but, you know, I think I need to do this. And we do the same thing. We obey God, but we don't obey him completely. And we try to help him out. And more often than not, our efforts to try to, you know, help God out, we end up hurting ourselves and we end up hurting others along with us. In fact, the story continues in Lot's family. Remember, they end up outside of Sodom and Gomorrah and ultimately inside of Sodom and Gomorrah. And there's all kinds of trouble that transpires. And God ultimately is going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, but he's going to save Lot and his family. And Lot is rescued along with Lot's two daughters. And from Lot's daughters, we get the Moabites, the Ammonites. These two people groups, these nations that will become a thorn in the side of Israel throughout history. That's what we get from all of this story. It's kind of sad. But God's people have a very long history of making the fulfillment of God's promises more complicated than they need to be. And we fit right in that mold, don't we? We make the fulfillment of God's promises more complicated than they need to be. But instead of just simply obeying God fully and trusting him totally, we try to help God out, and we make things so much more complicated than they need to be. And then verse 5, it says, Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions which they had accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. Now, if you're like me, you've grown up reading through the Old Testament, and the story just seems like, you know, Israel just wandering through the wilderness and for 40 years and trying to get to the promised land. That's all you hear about. We're headed to the promised land under the leadership of Moses, and it just keeps going and going. But then in this text, what does it say? It just says they set out for the land, and guess what? They end up in the land. I mean, it's just really, it's a short story. If the whole Bible was like that, that'd be a really short story, wouldn't it? But we have all the other information as they acquire the land. Now, Abraham hasn't really acquired the land. We'll learn a little bit about that later, but he's in the land. He's there. He gets to look at the land. Look at verse 6. It says that Abraham, he passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem and to the oak of Moreh. So it's kind of like you're buying a house, right? And you go in, you take a look around, you look at the rooms, you know, you go run the sink, flush the toilets, you know, check it all out. Make sure it's good. You're buying the house. And so he's walking through the land, doing his walkthrough. But there's a problem. There's kind of another catch in this story. Because it says, now the Canaanite was then in the land, right? It's kind of a little catch of the story. There's somebody already living there. Somebody already owns this land. This land already belongs to somebody else. And then look at verse 7. Verse 7 says, the Lord appeared to Abraham. Now remember, before, the Lord just spoke to Abraham, but now he's going to appear to Abraham and said, to your descendants, I will give this land. I'm going to give it to you. I promised it to you. I told you to give everything up. I told you to leave your home. I told you to leave it all behind. And now you're in this land, but there's somebody here, but you're going to receive it. I'm going to give your descendants this land. And then it says, so he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. And then he proceeded from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. So Abraham, he's left his home. He's left his family, except for his nephew Lot. That's kind of a catch in the story. But Lot is with him, and he's going to come with him. But he's left everything behind. And he's done this walkthrough of the land. He's kind of checked everything out, looked at what he was about to receive. And the land, we find, belongs to somebody else. And what does he do? What does he do? Does he just kind of throw his hands in the air and say, well, I guess God can't keep promises. I guess God is a liar. I guess God cannot do these things. No, he doesn't say any of that. He just pitches a tent, right? He builds an altar and calls upon the name of the Lord, right? It's kind of like somebody giving you a house and they say, you know, this is your new house, right? Check it out. It's nice, isn't it? There's somebody already living here. But it's yours. I'm giving it to you. I'm gifting it to you. And you just turn around and you pitch a tent in their backyard, right? And you have all your mail forwarded to this address because you're getting this house, even though there's somebody living there. Who does that? Who does that? Who is willing to trust somebody so much that they're willing to live in a land that will someday be their descendants' land, but for now belongs to somebody else, right? But what Abraham does, but what Abraham has done by leaving his home and pitching this tent in the Canaanites' backyard, this will be an example for future generations to come, right? Not only that Abraham was faithful, right? It's not just about the faithfulness of Abraham. It is about the faithfulness of Abraham, but it's not just about the faithfulness of Abraham. It's also about the faithfulness of God. The trustworthiness of God, that God will keep his promises, even if it seems impossible, even if it doesn't even make sense. It's not something one could truly comprehend. If God says it's going to happen, we can bank on it, right? We could put everything into it. We can sacrifice everything because we know that God is trustworthy, that God is a keeper of promises. In fact, the Hebrew writer, Hebrews chapter 11, it says that it's kind of a commentary of this whole story. And the Hebrew writer says, by faith, Abraham's trust and his commitment in God. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, he obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. And then verse 9, it says, by faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, right? He pitched his tent in the Canaanites' backyard, and as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. You see, God is trustworthy, right? He is a keeper of promises. And God's promise of a future home for his people is far greater than our present reality. Far greater. If God says it's greater, if God says he's going to do it, if God says that what is to come is worth the sacrifice, we can rest assured that it's worth the sacrifice. What is coming is greater than what we have in the present, of greater than we can ever imagine, right? And it's we need to be, as people of faith, like Abraham. We need to be people like Abraham. We need to trust God, right? Even though we haven't really seen the end results, we know that it's there. And we trust God fully. And we obey God totally and completely. And we're obedient to him. Isn't that what we're doing when we are baptized? I mean, isn't that what we do when we're baptized, when we're immersed in water, when we believe God, when he promises salvation through and in his son, and we respond with faithful and obedience by being immersed in water, and we leave our old life behind, and we begin living a new life in Jesus in the present with the hope of a future life, right? A hope of a home with God, with Jesus, with the saints forever. That's what we're doing in our baptism. We are putting everything we own, everything we are, all of our friends and our relatives, we're putting it all aside and we're saying, I will trust in God's promises. And for now, we wait, right? We quite literally pitch a tent right here in someone else's backyard. And we wait for God to act. We wait for God to fulfill his promises, knowing that someday, right? Someday, Jesus will come. That someday he will come. And that someday we will live in peace. That the meek, as Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, will someday inherit the earth. That the righteous who are persecuted will someday receive the kingdom. That someday that's going to become a reality. But for now, we pitch our tent in someone else's backyard and we wait because we trust in God. Because God is trustworthy. God's promises are true. And they are worth sacrificing everything for. At this time, Joe will come forward and he will lead us in our closing prayer.